Jerry Speckman has written a book called The Winner's Bible, Rewire Your Brain for Permanent Change. Kerry's basically, is that what I call you, Kerry?
Absolutely.
He's basically worked with a lot of top sports people, including Lewis Hamilton, the All Blacks, amongst others, to get elite sports people to change the way that they think and focus on the sports they take part in. So let's pick up where we just left off with Duncan Fletcher. We're talking about Ian Bell. Do you follow the cricket?
A little bit.
So Ian Bell is batting at the moment. Looks like he's doing a good job in trying to get a draw for England out in the middle with Collingwood. His mentality has been criticised, especially in the Ashes series, where the Aussies seem to get to him by likening him to a character from the American Pie films,
right,
and just chirping that at him throughout his innings. How would you go about working with a sportsman like that, whose confidence is low, but who clearly has, well, as Michael Vaughan says, the best technical ability of any English batsman?
Right. Well, the very interesting thing about the human brain, because it's all about the brain, a sports person's performance is dictated almost entirely by his brain, is that there are special modules in the brain that control their muscles. These are unconscious at the back of the brain, around the cerebellum and so on. And while you're using these unconscious modules, they're very fast, very precise, and very accurate. So when you're in the zone, you're not actually thinking about what you're trying to do for that very reason. It's a bit like when you learn to walk. As soon as you start walking, you don't have to think about what you do with your feet. But you imagine a baby learning to walk. It's stumbling and it's all over the place because it's conscious. Now, here's the problem. If you have an athlete who loses confidence or who has somebody getting to them by sledging or whatever, suddenly their conscious modules start kicking in. Conscious modules are slow, imprecise, and terrible. So having this level of confidence high and understanding that different parts of the brain control things differently, absolutely vital.
So when you hear people saying, just back yourself, trust yourself, that's what they mean. The instinctive part of you takes over and those modules kick in.
Absolutely. Yes, you can see that in brain scans. They are much faster, more precise. And as soon as you lose your confidence, you start second-guessing yourself and the wrong modules of your brain take over. Of course, the question is, how do you make sure your automatic modules are in play while you're playing sport? And of course, you know, if you're on the top of a roll and you're Roger Federer and you're winning everything, it's very easy to be confident. Mm. But if you've had a few bad ones, that's when it becomes really difficult.
And your logic, can you apply this only to elite sports people or can people who are looking to achieve a goal in whatever area, whether it's a new job, weight loss, you know, new year, people often try and chiff some timber at 2010, can they take this?
Yes. So I didn't actually set out to write this book. It started because actually an elite athlete had that exact same sort of problem. And I said, look, I'm a neuroscientist. What I know is how the brain actually works. And you've had all these people telling you, be positive, be confident, and rah, rah, rah. Doesn't work, I'm afraid. What we've got to do is get all your modules lined up. Now, it turns out that things like weight loss or overcoming an addiction or many other aspects of your personality have other reasons underneath where maybe in this case your logic knows what to do, maybe not eat chocolate, but your emotional circuits say, absolutely, I really want this chocolate. So we've got a conflict here. And so just trying more willpower and trying more logic isn't going to solve the problem. You're going to be just beating yourself up and wearing yourself out.
So what do you need to do?
Well, the first thing is you need to do is you have to understand that you need to align these different modules. And the analogy I use is many years ago, or a little while ago, I had a race against a champion kayaker, Steve Ferguson, a fantastic athlete. His wingspan between fingertips is 7 foot. I mean, just
wow.
A huge athlete. I said, I'm going to give you a race in a kayak. And he said, yeah, come on. But anyway, what we did is we had this race, and as soon as he started paddling, he was in great difficulty because what I'd done is underneath his kayak, I'd tilted the rudder of his kayak at 45 degrees and locked it for him. So he powers off with these great big powerful strokes, and of course the kayak goes around in circles. And the more he tries, the worse it gets. And of course I'm just serenely paddling along with my own little strokes and away I go and I beat him. Now, the analogy is really important here. Your emotional modules are like your rudder. They're under the water. You don't see them, but they have a huge impact on your behavior. Your paddles are above the water, you see them, and that's where you put all your effort. That's like your logical motion modules. So what you need to do is align those two together. So for everything, it's all about getting your emotional circuits, and most self-help books don't even attack that at all. They're always about rules, 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 and I'm about tools to adjust those things.
Mm. And so you've mentioned you're a neuroscientist, mm-hmm. which means what?
A neuroscientist is a person who says, how does the brain do what it actually does? So how does it see? How do you perceive motion? How do you remember things? So it's basically lots of these little computers in there, and they all have their own special way of doing these things. And a neuroscientist says, my job is to understand how they do that.
And before that, you were a mathematician and an astrophysicist.
Yes, that's true. For my sins, yes, I originally started out as an applied mathematician and ended up making some electronics, which I took to Ford Motor Company's world headquarters in America, and that's where I met Jackie Stewart, also Jackie Stewart, and he was really impressed with my electronics, and we ended up working together to measure experimental cars. And during that, I discovered Jackie was just phenomenally different to all the other test drivers. When we did some blind tests on them, these test drivers scored zero in a particular test, and Jackie, I think, scored about 93%. And so Ford said, what is it that makes a Jackie Stewart so special? And I said, look, I don't know, but let me try and find out. So I went to the RAF Farnborough, where they train Top Gun pilots, went to NASA, where they do the astronauts, and said, what do you do with these people? Had a good look at everything and really decided nobody really knew what went on inside a race driver's brain to perceive and control motion. So I said, well, let me try and find out. So I enrolled in a PhD, and we started, and we managed to find some things out. So long story, but it was an interesting story.
Would you say that your brain is very much a scientist brain rather than a creative brain, or do you think it's possible to be both?
No, it's absolutely possible to be both. You only have to take a scientist like the great Carl Sagan, who was a great physicist, but he wrote Cosmos, the book, and also the TV series, which I believe to this day is still the most watched TV in the history of television. So very creative man, very artistic. So no, I think if you have a big brain that's alive and firing, and that's another thing that's really important, I think what your listeners need to understand is that we all know we can go into the gym and train a bicep. We all know that it's going to get bigger. Mm. But actually, your human brain responds even more powerfully to training than a bicep does.
Because it's a muscle.
It's like a muscle. It's a good analogy. It's obviously not a muscle, but it's like that. And, you know, you look at, do a brain scan of people who have really trained their brains, and it's a phenomenal difference to a person who just goes through life without being challenged.
Do you think, and this is quite an extrapolation to make, but do you think that it's possible to stave off things like Alzheimer's if you keep the brain active right into your 70s, 80s, 90s?
It's scientifically proven that to be the case, yes. So, I mean, you may have a genetic predisposition to getting Alzheimer's, but if you train it, you can delay it. The usual numbers are between 5 and 10 years. But the other important thing is, of course, is that you lead a better life anyway during that time. You know, you're much more functional anyway. So, yes, it's a fantastic thing to learn how to train the brain.
The man you're listening to is Dr. Kerry Spackman. His book's called The Winner's Bible. We'll chat some more with him after the next travel update. So if you have a question now on what you've heard, or maybe you've tried to achieve a goal of your own that you'd like his advice on, then you can get through to us on 85058, which is our text number, or you can email us in the studio, phil@bbc.co.uk. 248, here's Nick.
Thank you very much, Phil. Let's start with the roads on Merseyside. The M58 has a lane closure in both directions between Switch Island and the M6 at the Oral Interchange because of ice. M4, we had a broken down lorry on the westbound carriageway towards Newport. It's now been cleared from between junctions 24 and 25. And there are delays on the M25 heading towards the Dartford Tunnel. So anti-clockwise queues from junction 2 through to the tunnel. That's because one of the two tunnels, the right-hand tunnel, is closed for essential repairs. M20 looks okay now at junction 8. Looks like there's still a lane closure for barrier repairs in both directions after the two lorries jackknifed there this morning. But traffic is moving quite reasonably. On the M32 out of Bristol, there's a broken down 4x4 at junction 2. That's the Eastville turning. Now, police in Lothian and Borders are still urging against non-essential travel there. All roads on the East Lothian side of Edinburgh very icy and dangerous. All main routes in the Borders and Dumfries and Galloway are open, but many still treacherous and not advisable. And that's the case with the A66 as well, which about an hour ago opened again between Scotch Corner and Brough, but it's still not really recommended. Snake Pass is closed. The Woodhead Pass is open though, so you have a viable alternative option there. And there's still plenty of problems across the UK's rail network. National Rail have set up a special helpline for you to call for the details on that disruption if you're planning on heading home later on today, having commuted in. 08453 017 641 is the number. Nick Duncalf, Bye Bye Travel.
Hello there. Sorry if you were thoroughly enjoying the travel or something. It's Chris Addison here. Just wanted to interrupt your listening for 30 seconds or so to tell you about my new show here on 5 Live.
7 Day Sunday.
We rip up the week's news.
Too much news to get through, obviously, in and out, but we will give it a go.
Then, you know, feel a bit bad about it and then tape it back together all in the wrong order and just probably totally miss the point.
7 Day Sunday with Chris Addison.
And three other available people every Sunday from 11 a.m.
on 5 Live.
10 to 3, Thursday afternoon. Are England going to do this? Kevin Howells is in Cape Town.
Yes, I think they will. I wish I hadn't been so certain in my answer then. I don't know what came over me. 272 for 5. This partnership worth 112 runs between Collingwood and Bell. We're into the final hour, as we call it, of this test match. We now have 14 overs remaining to go, 13 obviously at the completion. This is an appeal though for a catch. Is he out? Yes, he is. And it looks to me if it's Paul Collingwood, who's dismissed. Duncan Fletcher is with me. A breakthrough, 272 for 6. There I was, just looking down at my notes and also at the scoreboard for all the important information I saw it. Duncan, you were watching the play. What happened?
Dumini decided to come round the wicket, went across them, and he just nicked it straight to Jack Cullis at first slip.
Well, Collingwood has gone for 14, and that obviously opens up a little bit. Duncan, if you were on that balcony now with England, what would you be thinking?
Nah, I think England are home and dry. I really do. To get by having got a night watchman, and you know you were six down, you think right, we're into the tail, but they're far from into the tail. They've got Pryor, Broad and Swan still to come, and it'll be a huge ask. I think England must be very confident of holding out here.
40 off 188 deliveries. Paul Collingwood, I'm not too sure if somebody like Collingwood always seems so natural, his mental state and his strength. But Duncan, just briefly, we've been fascinated by your chat there, Phil. Yeah. I know that Duncan's always been a firm supporter of sports psychology, as he might call it. Your guest might not. But I'm sure, Duncan, you will have met some resistance within the game to it, and yet clearly it has worked for some players.
Yes, I'm a strong supporter of it. The resistance has mainly come from older players who weren't involved and were a bit reluctant to get involved with sports psychology. The one area that I did concern me, though, is if we got someone into the game, especially cricket, I was times would resist it if the player or the psychologist didn't understand the game of cricket deeply or hadn't played it. And I've been involved with someone at the moment called Jeremy Snape, who obviously played first class cricket for a long time and played for England under me in the One Day, and he's done it.
And we should point out he's with South Africa right now.
He's with South Africa. And the reason why I'm saying this is, as a cricket coach, who you could say you can see things changing technically because it's external, I was a bit worried about bringing a sports psychologist in who hadn't played cricket, because it could affect a guy between the ears, and you can't see that, and you could learn about it too late that he has had a detrimental effect rather than a positive effect.
Dr. Kerry Spassman, what do you think?
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. I'm clearly not a sports psychologist, but there's a real risk of people messing inside people's brains and actually, with the best of intention, causing problems. I think, for example, the work that I do with the All Blacks, they have their own sports psychologists, they have their own coaches and support staff. What I come in and do is I do what they call the deep dive. And in the deep dive, we get right inside that person's psyche at a different level that a sports psychologist would do. And we end up providing a really robust platform for other people to work with. I think the problem with modern sport is it is so very difficult. It's so very tough on the players. They're traveling pretty much all the time. They're living in hotels. And if you take an All Black who's played 50 test matches, he's been beaten up in the bottom of a scrum so many times. How do you get the very, very best out of that person so they're in the zone all the time? That's not just motivation, and that's not just the normal things. So that's the sort of thing I get more involved in.
What do you think, Duncan?
Yes, I agree 100% with that. But, you know, there's certain areas, I didn't say totally that I wouldn't use a sports psychologist if you hadn't played cricket, for example. But in a lot of areas, you've really got to understand the psychology of the sport and how it's played and the pressures that a batsman goes under, which will be different to other sports. And you must really know that. A bowler, what he's going through, or a fielder. And so there's certain finer elements of the game that it's important that person appreciates what is required.
And what's Matt Pryor going through now, Duncan? He's just come out to bat to replace Collingwood. They've got about six round the bat from what I can see on the monitor here.
Well, he's just got his key is to try and be relaxed. I mean, at the moment, because he must feel relaxed, because it'd be some foolish betting to lose it from you.
Kevin, score update.
272 for six and 12.5 overs remaining.
Gentlemen, thank you very much indeed. Always lovely to have your company. Kevin, we'll check back in with you in 15 minutes or so. Fascinating to get the perspectives of Duncan Fletcher, isn't it? A man who coached the England cricket side on what you do. And you mentioned the All Blacks there. Give people a flavour of what you've done with the All Blacks, because you said they've already got their own sports psychologist, so it's not that.
Yes, absolutely. And so the last thing I'd want to do is interfere with the technique of the sport, which has been alluded to here with the batsman, for example, or with the rugby player. You know, a coach like Graham Henry has been around rugby for more years than I've been alive. He knows everything. He's seen everything. What I do is I look at the four pillars of a human, and I think there are four pillars. There's the history of the person, everything they've been through. There's the physiology, how they're wired, their genes and so on, the psychology, the thoughts that run through their head, and their philosophy, their view of life and the universe. And so in those four pillars is actually what makes up their performance, their psyche, everything about them. And almost inevitably, if you've been around sport for long enough, there's been things that have got into those four pillars that are going to affect your performance. It may not be obvious on a day-to-day basis technically what's going on. My job is to fix those for those people. And so the same applies whether we're fixing a cricket player, a rugby player, or maybe trying to help a woman get off methamphetamine or something like that.
Now let me talk to you about Brian Moore, the England rugby union hooker, who's my guest yesterday. And right. He was talking, he's got a new book out, and he was talking about his natural aggression, his stubbornness, his competitive nature, which he knew had come from his birth parents rather than his adoptive parent, because they were, completely different personality traits. Now, I don't have those.
Yep.
So no amount of neuroscience could get me to compete against someone like Brian Moore, because that's the point I'm making. Isn't it, to be elite sportsman, you need a certain amount of natural inbuilt talent and physical properties?
Yes, and this is where a lot of self-help books are completely wrong. They say, have the dream. If you have the dream, you're going to be successful. You know, I'm never going to be heavyweight champion of the world. I'm never going to beat someone like Lennox Lewis because he's 6'7.5" and weighs 21 stone or whatever. And likewise, just as my physique is different to everybody else's, and that's obvious, how your brain is wired is very different to how mine is wired. Your genes determine a lot of your behavior. So you're not born with this natural aggression, this natural ability to sit in the bottom of a scrum and do what people do in the bottom of the scrum. However, you do have your own unique skills. And one of the things is to find out your own intrinsic drivers and your own skills and make the most of them. To try and turn you into a hooker is the wrong thing. To turn you into a fantastic DJ, now that's a fantastic result because that's what you're good at. So finding how you maximize your natural skills and aligning them with your career. And so many people are completely going in the wrong direction. And that's another crucial thing in my book, as I really try to get people to understand who they really are, what their intrinsic drivers are, and what is the direction that's going to make them happy and successful.
Have you read a book called Outliers by Malcolm Gladwell?
Yes, indeed.
Are you familiar with that?
Yeah.
Now, Malcolm's theory on success is that you need 10,000 hours of whatever it is you do under your belt before you become elite or the top of your tree. How does that fit in with your theories in this book?
That's absolutely true. That's a fact. So to be a world-class person at anything, we're talking skill here. So world-class at skill requires around about 10,000 hours. And I did a little study just to show the difference between skill, innate skill, and learnt skill. If you look back over Wimbledon for the last 32 years, only three junior Wimbledon champions, male and female, ever went on to be senior champions. These are the most talented juniors, went nowhere. But you look at the people who became senior champions, Martina Navratilova, when she was a junior, she was very, very average. So, but what she did was every year she improved, every year she got better, and she worked her tail off. And it's the same with someone like Michael Schumacher. You know, he always used to get beaten by Heinz Harald Frentzen when they were younger. Frentzen went nowhere, Schumacher went everywhere. It's just relentless progress.
Well, after the news with Justine, I'm going to ask you about Schumacher's return to Formula One, and we'll ask you about the work with Lewis Hamilton I know you've been doing, and also about the rest of the stuff that's in the book. Listeners' questions for you coming through to us now. 850-58 on the text for your question to Dr. Kerry Spackman or phil@bbc.co.uk. It's 3 o'clock.
on digital and online.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
The Prime Minister has dismissed the attempt to unseat him as Labour leader as a storm in a teacup. Few MPs came out in support of Geoff Hoon and Patricia Hewitt when they called for a secret ballot on Gordon Brown's future. John Knight is the leader of Ashfield District Council in Nottinghamshire, which is Mr Hoon's local council.
I was shocked and disappointed. I think that's probably a universal feeling of the ordinary Labour members in Ashfield. I think it would be true to say I was somewhat disappointed in what he'd done.
Ice and snow are continuing to cause disruption across much of the UK. Thousands of schools remain closed and thousands of households in southern England are without power. A number of flights have been cancelled or delayed and rail companies are running reduced services. Conditions on some roads are treacherous. The Federation of Small Businesses estimates that one in 10 people missed work yesterday. Paul Sellers is from the TUC.
If the official advice is not to travel, then of course you shouldn't do so. We believe that employers should pay people in those circumstances wherever they can. And many employees actually do have that right through their contract of employment, through the staff handbook.
A man's body has been found under ice in a lake at a country club in Surrey. A member of staff made the discovery at the Lakeside Country Club in Frimley Green this morning. Eurostar is running a limited service following the breakdown of a Brussels to London train in a tunnel this morning. Only one Eurostar train is being allowed in the tunnel at a time, which means travellers have to be prepared for long delays. After 13 years with the BBC, Jonathan Ross says he's decided to move on. The presenter says he won't renegotiate his contract when it runs out in the summer. Here's our media correspondent, Torin Douglas.
There's been stuff in the papers about what the next deal would be, that he was prepared to take a cut and so on, that it would only be an exclusive BBC deal. And that's the nature of the market at the moment. There is a lot less money in the commercial world. But for him totally to go and to give up his radio show as well as the television shows, I think that's what's really surprised people, because he really, from radio, he loved radio. The Radio 2 show was a big success. And the fact that he's giving up all of those, I think, is a shock.
An inquiry by the Ministry of Defence into the collision of two RAF light aircraft over the Vale of Glamorgan says the pilots didn't see each other until it was too late. Two Air Training Corps cadets, Nikita Walter, who was 13, and Katie Jo Davis, who was 14, died in the crash near Porthcawl last February. Almost 2 million new cars have been sold in the past year. The Society of Motor Manufacturers and Traders says the figure is above expectations. Motoring journalist Quentin Wilson believes the scrappage scheme has had an impact.
21% of all those sales were due to the scrappage scheme, and it created a lot of activity, a lot of bustle, and a lot of optimism too. People also decided to change cars before the hike in VAT on the 1st of January.
And interest rates have been held at 0.5%. The cost of borrowing has been the same since March last year. Sport now is Philip.
A marathon century stand between Ian Bell and Paul Collingwood put England inside of an unlikely draw in the third test, which would see them take a 1-0 lead into the finale in Johannesburg next week. But could there be a nasty sting in the tail, Kevin Howes?
Matt Prior's gone for four, caught well by de Villiers, low down at silly point, just prodding forward to the bowling of Dumini. 11 overs left of this test match, three wickets standing, 278 for three. Broad has just gone out to join Ian Bell on 70. Duncan Fletcher, I remember there have been many occasions when I've been sitting watching the TV at home or whatever, and I've seen you on a balcony there with England, of course, in most more recent years, and you've had this face of ice coldness in situations like this. I have to say, you look no different here today. Still no panic?
No, I wouldn't panic. There's not enough overs to bowl them out, and there's some good batters still to come in.
I'm pleased something like Duncan is saying this. 278 for seven, and by the way, 188 off that target.
We were just wondering, where's Monty when you need him? That's what we were wondering. Didn't he was the hero of the hour, wasn't he, in Cardiff?
Well, yes, Monty, I think, will certainly be somewhere up around Johannesburg way, probably watching on the TV as we speak, because he's spending his winter here in South Africa. But cool. Yeah, but there are others around as well. I mean, Swan and Graham Onions, who did a great job with Collingwood, you may remember, to save the first test in Pretoria. So, there are others, if needed.
Gentlemen, thank you for the time being.
So 10 and a half overs to go then. England 278 for seven as they look to cling on for a draw. You can follow every ball live on 5 Live Sports Extra. Elsewhere today, Manchester City say Patrick Vieira will have a medical at Eastlands today. The former Arsenal midfielder looks set to leave Inter Milan and says it's vital for him to get back into the France team in World Cup year. One of the favourites for the soon-to-be vacant Burnley job, the Hibs manager John Hughes, has ruled himself out of the running. He says there's still plenty to be done at Easter Road. The weekend's championship matches, and indeed the whole football programme, is being badly affected by the weather. Among those games off in the championship, Preston against Doncaster Manchester, which was due to be new manager Darren Ferguson's first charge of the club. A full list of the postponed games, of course, on our BBC Sports website. And Manny Pacquiao's promoter Bob Arum says there's no chance of salvaging his proposed super fight with Floyd Mayweather Jr. for March the 13th after talks failed to resolve the fighter's differences.
Philip, thank you. We'll keep all of our eyes on the cricket for you. 10.2 overs remaining. You won't miss any action. If there's a wicket go down, we will obviously bring it to you on the programme. It's Phil Williams here on 5 Live, 5 past 3. My guest is Dr. Kerry Spackman, a neuroscientist who spent much of his career helping elite athletes, specifically to what he calls in this book, rewire their brains. The book is called The Winner's Bible. And the doctor has worked with Lewis Hamilton, he's worked with the All Blacks, he's worked with a whole host of sporting people. And some questions for you from Steve, first of all, who said, Phil, I've failed an exam twice. I'm going to take it again for the final attempt. How do you get your head around having failing something twice and wanting to pass it for the third time?
Well, I guess the first thing is one has to be realistic about why one failed. Did one not do the homework, not learn correctly? Is it something that one has a skill at? So I think one has to be more than just motivated. One has to look very carefully at what's gone wrong and why. And to be a little bit presumptuous of me to try and tell them how this person's going to be successful. But one of the most important things is that life does give you disappointments. That's a fact of life. And learning how to overcome disappointment and disaster is a real skill.
Well, there's a chapter about that in your book.
A whole chapter about that, because it's, if you're a sports person, you're going to have disaster. Mm. If you live long enough, you're going to have disaster. So your listener running and something's gone wrong. The question is, how do you get over that? I have a whole chapter on that, because there's about 7 or 8 different steps you need to follow.
Can you give us a couple now?
Well, I think the first thing is just to realise that that's what happens in life. The second thing is what's really common about people who can get over problems is that they have an exocentric view of life. They look about things outside. Mm. It's not just central to themselves. If you're looking at a bigger picture and you have the bigger view in life, the small up and downs in life don't seem to affect you so much.
And there's a certain sense of acceptance of the failure as well that you have to reach before you can move on, isn't there? There's a sense of shame that comes with a failure that you need to get rid of.
Well, let me give you a very short example about myself when I failed. I remember when I was studying mathematics, I did a midterm exam and I got a B, which for me was a really bad result. And I was really upset by that. And I blamed everything. I blamed the exam was not enough time. And I had 100 excuses. And then I said to myself, you know what? If I did that many hours work and that's what it took to get a B, then I need to double that to get an A. And so I had a good look at myself, and the net result was I ended up, you know, winning a prize in maths. But the initial thing was I blamed everybody else, and then I said, no, I've got to get on with it.
Excellent. Can I ask you about the chapter in the book I found most intriguing? It's quite towards the end of the book. It's a very personal chapter. Mm. This is about Grandpa's cottage.
Yes.
And the reason I'm intrigued by this is because also your Wikipedia page says you were born to your father, Dr. Dennis Spackman, and grandfather, Sir Trevor Henry Spackman. And there's very little mention of a mum figure in there. But you do refer to mum in the book. And I just wonder, without being too impertinent, why that was.
My grandfather lived to 106 years of age and had his marbles all the way through. One of the smartest men I've ever met. A tremendous fellow. He was larger than life. My father also, if you read the book, is an extraordinary individual. And quite simply, my mother was a lovely lady, but just didn't have that force of personality that some people are just larger than life. And I think those two people were just such huge characters that they figure largely in my life.
It's very clear from reading this that I would hesitate to use the word idolise, but they've mentored you and you've taken a lot from them. And I wondered if that's attributable to the success that you're now enjoying.
I think when you read that last chapter, because it is a personal chapter, the first part of my life was, I would have to say, quite unhappy, very sad. Even though I had everything physically, financially, I was very happy. I was a very lonely, sort of sad sort of fellow. And it was only many years working through these things and tools that you discover what actually turns a person able to rise above their circumstances. And you know, Grandpa gave me lots of little stories on the way, lots of little tips, which I've tried to put in the book there.
Because obviously when The reason I'm focusing on this now is because when you speak to a lot of people who are at the very top of their tree, their driving force has sometimes come from unhappiness elsewhere.
Yes, people are driven by many things. Sometimes it is a desire to get out of the slums. You take someone like Muhammad Ali, who had a very tough upbringing, no money whatever, very hard driven and knows what it is. Other people can have that inside themselves all the way through. So the question is, what can you tap into given your circumstances?
A question for you that's coming on the text. Let's just disappear. There it is. John in Norwich. And this is a good general one for you. You talked about training the brain earlier in the interview. John says, what is the most effective way to train the brain? What activities, what methods?
Okay, so there's a lot of things there. The brain has many different things, such as ability to remember. So memory is an important aspect. Reaction times is important. Ability to think flexibly, to change, multitask. So there's a variety of tools you need to use. So just as you
just
go
pause for me there. There's a review at the cricket. Kevin Howells and Duncan Fletcher. Now this is a catch, an appeal for a catch.
They're queuing up to be on your programme. Michael Vaughan has replaced Duncan Fletcher, but yes, Stuart Broad on naught, prodding forward to the bowling of Dumini. It's gone to review because the umpire said, he wasn't too sure. I think he said not out.
Have you seen the review?
We've seen the review.
It looks like a bump ball to me.
What do you say?
It looks like a bump ball. It looks like he's
hit
into the
ground. Former England captain?
Yeah, he'll know way more than either of us.
Well, it's just said on the screen, not out. So we said when we were watching, we let them make the decision for us. But it looked like a bump ball. But there's a little bit of panic in the England camp at the minute.
Now, it's interesting you should say that, Michael, because Duncan Fletcher was just sat in your seat and he said there's no call for panic at all. They don't have enough overs to bowl them out, but there's nine.
Well, we saw at Centurion in the first game that it happened very, very quickly. If South Africa get a wicket in the next two or three overs, England are going to be under huge pressure. Graham Swan's in next, and then Graham Onions, who was the hero at Centurion. We don't want him coming out again.
Phil, I'm fascinated to know off Michael now. Was it like this in the dressing room with you two then? Duncan be saying, don't worry, Captain, everything's fine. You'd be saying,
He's actually a lot more chilled out here than he was as a coach. I was the chilled captain. He was the real panicky coach.
Well, I tell you, I'm a bit panicky. 278 for seven.
We'll check back in with you very shortly. Thank you very much indeed. Not out the judgment of that review. So before that, Dr. Kerry Spackman was about to explain how you can train the brain.
Yes, and I think when you go to the gym, you don't just do one exercise. You don't just do squats or bench presses. You have a variety of exercises. I think you need a variety of exercises to train the brain.
Nick in Oxford, I suffer from anxiety, specifically GAD. Does this approach have any relevance with treatment of the condition? GAD, I'm not familiar with.
I'm not quite sure exactly what the cause of her issue is. Again, it's very difficult to diagnose over the phone somebody, so I'd really need to have a good look at that.
Sure.
But it has helped people with anxiety.
I wonder on this one, Liz in Hampshire, I suffer from chronic pain, which I understand has become hardwired. Is it possible to teach my brain to tune out from the source of the pain?
Oh, that's a very good question. Yes. And the answer is yes, you can get some help here. That sometimes brain pain circuits turn on and then they wire themselves, and they're very, very difficult to turn off, even though there's no actual organic cause of the pain. So you need to see a specialist on that because it can really be helped.
Look, thanks ever so much for coming and taking the questions and talking to us. And it was great to get a former England cricket coach to talk to you about, you know, your perspective on things and his perspective. I found that fascinating. So I really appreciate that. Dr. Kerry Spackman.
Thanks
very
much.
Winner's Bible is his book, Rewire Your Brain for Permanent Change. Thank you for your company this afternoon. Five Live, Thursday afternoon, 13 minutes past two. And Boyd Hill to be one.